The Road to Rediscovery is sponsored by BetterHelp. Let me ask you something. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? You know, for me growing up, feelings of anxiety, inadequacy, doubt, and even imposter syndrome got in the way of me reaching my goals and reaching my full potential, right? So BetterHelp addresses these and more. It's not a crisis line and it's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't have to ever sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and get this, financial aid is even available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. They mean it. Visit BetterHelp.com/RoadToRediscovery. That's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And there's a special offer for our Road to Rediscovery listeners. Get 10% off your first month when you register at BetterHelp.com/RoadToRediscovery. We're all on this journey of life together, and it sure feels good to know professional help is within our reach with BetterHelp. Again, that's Better, H-E-L-P. Thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. My special guest is an environmental journalist, a workshop leader, professional speaker, and blogger. She's also the author of the award-winning book, You Aren't Depression's Victim. And her work has been published in newspapers, regional and national magazines, blog sites, and a lot more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Deborah Atlas to the show. Deborah, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you all very much.
Oh, absolutely. So we have a lot to unpack here. I'm very, very excited to talk about this book, okay? You Aren't Depression's Victim. By the way, I love the title. It seems to tell in a very... It seems to tell what the book is about in a very succinct way, very concise way. And just the words of the title itself hits you right between the eyes in a profound way. Now, we're going to discuss the book here in a little bit, but I wanted to see if you can first give a little context or a glimpse into your journey and the inspiration that led you to the work you're doing today.
Ah, that's a lot of questions.
Yeah, it sure is.
I have to say right off the back, I never planned to make this song. I've had depression since age two. Wow. But I wasn't diagnosed until my mid-40s. And so that was a lot of years spent in despair and upset for no apparent reason. And even before I was officially diagnosed, I came down with chronic fatigue. I was living out in the country in Northern California, and there wasn't anybody around. And the only thing I could do was occasionally start to write a little bit of journaling here and there, to try and figure out what was going on. Because, by the way, anybody that has depression that gets seriously ill throws them deeper into depression. So it was very intense. And over a period of years, I kept adding to that journaling. And, but again, never any intention to have a book until COVID happened.
Yeah.
And everything stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I looked into my computer files. And, oh my God, look at all I've got here. That's when I realized it had to be a book, and the timing was perfect. So that's how it came about.
Gotcha. Thank you for sharing that with us. And yeah, when COVID hit and everything just shut down, you know, can you imagine how anyone's depression, say prior to the shutdown, prior to COVID, and now you have this on top of everything, you know, someone who either has problems with anxiety or problems with depression or problems with both, I mean, it could be exponential. That was brought on.
It has. You know, in my research, when I decided to make this book, and I looked at the statistics about depression and anxiety, and the numbers since COVID exploded.
Wow.
And even now, the numbers have not gone down very much. In some cases, they continue to escalate. So we're still feeling the impact of what happened when COVID became officially a pandemic.
Amazing. So we are still feeling those pains, even though, let's say, we're a year or two removed from the last biggest spread. That doesn't mean we're out of the woods in terms of depression or anxiety.
Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. The number of American adults who are dealing mental illness or depression is now 1 in 4. And it 1.4. Used to be 1 in 5.
One in six. 1 in 6.
Women are most harder hit than men. And it used to be 1 in 4. Now it's 1 in 3. And teens are absolutely the hardest hit group of anybody. And they're still dealing. Because I asked them at the book signings that I have when teenagers show up, and if you get them separated from their parents to ask me a question, every single one says it hasn't gotten better.
Mm.
So it's very concerning.
Yeah. No, it sure is. Wow. That is, that's an eye-opening perspective.
Yeah.
No, it truly is. One thing I wanted to see if you can, as we start to talk about your book, Deborah, is I would love for you to just clarify and share with the listeners, explain for the listeners, what is the edge of depression, the edge of depression?
Most people don't know that there is something like an edge. And what I mean by that is when you fall into depression, I liken it to falling into a dark, cold tunnel where you can't see the signs, there's no light, and you don't know how you got there, you don't know how long you're going to be there, and it all seems to be. But the tunnel has this precipice. And if you're aware of what's happening, you can actually stop yourself at that edge. That's what I'm referring to. There's a moment, but it takes a lot of awareness in order to be able to know that that's happening there. If you're aware of what's going on, and I talk a lot about awareness in the book, there is that moment and you can go, wait. And you can stand at the edge and go, I'm stepping back.
Yeah, stepping back. Gotcha. And that was actually leading to my next question. You know, how can we recognize this when we reach it, or before it happens, right? In a proactive way. I'm assuming your book has some anecdotes and methods and strategies to identify if you are at or near the edge of depression, and not just recognize it, but also how to handle it?
First of all, I have to say it takes work.
Okay.
It takes a willingness to work with what's going on, to train yourself to be more aware and alert to the circumstances, to the things that trigger you. Most of the time, I know for me, for years living with depression, I had no idea. Something would happen to me over the anxiety until I finally got diagnosed with depression and we started to unravel all of this stuff.
Right.
And my therapist started to make distinctions between things that for which I never had distinctions. Mm. Like, there are people that have the blues, they just get sad. And so what are you talking about? Give me that sign. You know, he had to explain it to me. And slowly, I began to understand that kind of distinction. And when you start to see the differences, that's when you start to have a glimmer that you're actually in the edge. You know, people who are sad, there's something that happens. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
And I went, really? That happens to people?
Mm-hmm.
Now I have that experience. But before I have that distinction, before I understood, it was like a foreign language.
I see. So it took a while to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got you. That's amazing. And I love how you visualize what the edge of depression looks like, right? Because in my mind, it would be quite relatable from person to person, no matter who is going through the depression. You're at this top, at this edge, and there's this dark tunnel, you know, and just visualizing what that looks like and equating that to where we are in our current state.
Yes.
You know, if we are going through depression is very, very relatable. And it draws a vision in the reader's mind's eye, I would imagine. And they can determine if that's where they are as well. I wanted to talk with you about taking a stand, right, against depression, a big part of your book is about, right? But before we dive into that, I want to ask you about stories, okay? We all have our story. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who have encountered depression also consider the depression as part of their story. First off, I want to know what your thoughts are on that. And is there a healthy way that we can have depression part of our story without feeling victimized by it or without having it define who we are today?
What a great question. You know, I've done a lot of work over the years. You know, my mm-hmm. therapist that diagnosed me, that was back in 96.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long time and a lot of work. And those of us who live with depression a lot of our lives do feel victimized. But again, it comes back to awareness
mm-hmm.
and comes back to a commitment to say, wait, I don't have to go there.
Yes.
And if you can make that statement, keep making that statement, mm-hmm. that's the standard.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter what the circumstance is. And let me tell you, I've been through a lot of circumstances, some of which have been pretty tough. You know, losing my parents, two bad car accidents, neither through my fault. Thing, life brings you fireballs. All the time. And anything can throw you over the edge. And by the way, big stuff can throw you over the edge. I had that happen recently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I had some of these things. I've been doing them the last year. And I came back from back-to-back signings. And Monday, Tuesday, nothing got accomplished. People didn't call me back, I could reach people. A plus B didn't equal C.
Wow.
And Wednesday, I went, wait a minute. Are you kidding me? I'd stumbled to the edge and teetering over it. And I went, it's about how good can you have it.
Yeah.
So I just started to laugh. Because even Wednesday, the thought was, what if it all works out? Then what?
Yeah.
So there's anything. And at that moment, when I realized that thought had happened and my reaction had happened,
yeah.
I went, wait, walk it back. Enough of this. And suddenly people were calling me back and we could reach people and all my senses flowed. So it's whatever the circumstance is, whether it's a thought that you have, something happens, or something just happened that you expect should happen, any of those kinds of things. The more aware of those things you are, the more willing and committed you are to saying, no, I'm not going.
Yes.
That's the first two big steps. And I talk a lot about that in my book, You Aren't Depression's Victim, which, by the way, it kind of evolved into a workbook. I ask a lot of questions that most people don't think about. I look outside the box a lot. So as they answer the questions, they start to become more aware of the stuff, what the things are that trigger them, how they react in certain situations. And then they start to see what could they do instead. And that's pretty powerful.
That's very powerful. That's very, very powerful. And to me, Deborah, it sounds like it speaks to the improvements of oneself and the benefits that someone suffering with depression can get from reading your book, right? A bolder sense of self, a better sense of self-awareness, let's say a more empowered outlook on life, things like that.
Yes.
Amazing. Fantastic. One thing I also wanted to know, because I know it's important to take a strong stand against refusing to be victimized by depression, refusing to let it control your life and navigate every waking hour of your existence, and even subconsciously, right? And you have the tools and methods to help and support those individuals within your book, as well as your workshops. But I wanted to know, as an author, you know, as a workshop leader and a public speaker that speaks, you know, who speaks on depression, has it ever been a challenge to talk to others about not being a victim of depression? You know, kind of like, don't be a victim, pull up your bootstraps and take back your life. Okay. But at the same time, trying real carefully not to diminish their depression, which I'm thinking is very real to them at the time.
Sure.
You know, but I guess basically somehow typically acknowledging their depression for what it is, but then go on to explain what is not.
I'm going to answer slightly differently, because how you phrased it, people could get a little confused by it.
Sure.
Because my stand is for them taking a stand and empowering them to take a stand, not against them. And I have talked to people whose stories have had my eyes go in the back of my head. I thank God I haven't gone sometimes to that level that people have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be the first to say, listen, that is incredibly intense. And I am thrilled that you're here in front of me that we can look at this. Because I have to validate what they've been through. It's been incredibly real, incredibly difficult, and has formed everything else in their life and how they think and what they do.
Yeah.
I would never say to somebody, you know, go up by bootstraps, because that is an direction to go.
Right, right.
So when people come up to me and share their stories with me, sometimes it's very, very difficult for them too. And I share some of my story, and there are a lot of new stories in the book, Black Depression Spectrum. And they're very relatable.
Yeah.
Which is why I knew they had to be in there.
Yes.
So to have them be willing to share even a part of that with me is a giant step for a lot of people.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And when they're willing to take a look at the book, because sometimes I'm just standing in the bookstore at the front, say, you know, introducing myself and the book, and we talk a minute, and I say, take a look.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they'll turn to the questions and go, wow, mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about this before.
Mm-hmm.
A
mm-hmm.
new thought, a new possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it's a book about hope and possibilities for people.
Love it. Understood. Hope and possibilities for people. And this is the hope that, you know, there is hope from depression. There is a way out. And once you find that way out, and with your help in the book, then imagine the possibilities of who you can become, the yeah. life you can lead, right?
Sure. And I'm a living example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started working with this therapist and started unraveling the stuff that I've been doing for decades and started to do the work.
Yeah.
Out of that came a few years later, me falling into becoming a journalist, becoming an environmental journalist. I didn't seek it,
yeah.
but I was looking at maybe being a writer, and the opportunity just fell into place. I've always said the best things in my life fall in my head.
Yes. Right.
And that would have happened if I hadn't been willing to do the work and continue to do the work.
Yes.
So
you have to do the work.
I forget who said, and maybe it was Goethe, I don't know, but somebody said, when you take committed action, you get big results. Something like that. I've just fractured the quote badly, but it's something like that. And I really remember that. So even when it's uncomfortable, even when I can be scared out of my mind to take a calculated step, I know that taking a big step will lead to something I never anticipated that probably is going to make a difference for me.
Yes. Yes. And it's usually those things that you never anticipate that, yeah. that could really have an impact on someone's life, right?
I never planned to be a workshop leader. I hoped to be a good writer, to be an author. Whoops, it wasn't in my thinking. And be a professional speaker. I took in eighth grade, I took a public speaking course, and it was excruciating. Because
I was,
as a kid growing up, you couldn't get me in front of a room. I was the kid all the way through sixth grade. I never got up and gave a report. They'd call on me, I'd get up, and I'd faint.
Yeah.
They might not talk to me. But I decided it was time to get through this thing. But
yes,
being
yes.
in front of hundreds and thousands of people, are you kidding me? I could never do this for that.
Yeah, that's tough. And it's always been said that public speaking is up there in one of the most fearful things to do, you know, than skydiving and other things, you know. Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. So, Deborah, I understand that you are a believer of finding daily inspiration, you know, and so can you share with the listeners how daily inspiration can help us live a balanced, happy life?
How do I answer that? I find that when I find things that inspire me, and it's the little things, The little things like I do home organic gardening, and I walk into my garden 4, 5, 6 times a day, sometimes just to stand there.
Yeah.
And, wow, what's happening here? Look what I did. Or, look, you know, watch the birds flying in my backyard and all the little things. And I tell people that don't know what to do for inspiration, go outside and be in nature for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yes.
Guarantee you find something to lift you up.
Yes.
The little things are what makes such a difference, because it takes us outside of what's going on up here and puts our focus out there. Sorry about that.
Absolutely.
And when you can do that, it takes you out of the step just for a few minutes.
I'm sorry, it takes you out of
the stuff that's going on in thoughts.
Oh, yes, yes. The thoughts in your head, and and there's things we tell ourselves, right? We have that internal dialogue.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And
like the self-talk.
Yes, the self-talk. Yeah, it gets us out of that routine, out of that rut. To appreciate what's around us. And I am a huge believer of being in the present. And so, you know, to go out in nature and to take that time to be outward focused instead of inward focused, in taking pleasure in the little things that's around us, the beauty that nature reveals by being outward focused, you know, that really helps us to be absorbed in the present, you know?
I have a process that I discovered for myself when I was recovering from chronic fatigue, and I think it helped me start the recovery process. And this is what I call find 3 miracles.
Okay.
And I've passed through to friends and colleagues for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody says to me, things are so hard, coming together, I'm getting depressed. I say, here, let's do this. And I talk about the miracle process. And for me, it happened at the worst part of chronic fatigue. And chronic fatigue is something I hope anybody can go through, because it robs you of energy, of ability to focus, ability to do anything. And in the midst of this, I suddenly have this flash, okay, great. Find 3 miracles and state them out loud. Because when you say things, it's very powerful.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, 3 miracles. What? So I was living in the country. So the first one was a snow shooting. Remember, you're in a cold, dark tunnel. You can't see the light. So for me to even acknowledge the snow shooting was a big deal. The next one was, I lived out in the country. There were a lot of birds flying all over the place. It was negative. So I said, oh, that's my second. And my third miracle was, I lived in a property that had a creek running through it that sounded glorious. I said, that's my third miracle. So I stated my 3 miracles. And I went, yeah. And the next day I felt a little bit better. So I came up with 3 more miracles. And I said, that's my lab. And the next day I felt a little bit better. And I did this for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
At the end of which, I felt substantially better. Now, I still had chronic fatigue, but I didn't have the despair that went through it.
Ah, I see.
That's the difference.
I see.
Can do it. It's a thing.
Right.
And it ups your awareness of what's going on around you. And by stating those things out loud, it puts your energy into that. It puts your focus into that and off of you.
I got you. Wow. 3 miracles. Ooh. That's that, I mean, that speaks volumes right there. And what a great method, you know. Man, that is so awesome. So Deborah, how can the listeners follow you, connect with you, and maybe even pick up a copy of your book?
Sure. I have my website, which is deborahatlas.com, D-E-B-R-A-A-T-L-A-S, Com. That's the only dot in there.
Okay. No, that's good. And your website will have the links to where they can get the book and other connection links?
Yes. And also it'll have links to, I do a training program, both for public and for companies I tailor. And the program is called Step Back from the Edge. And I can do it. I've done it as a keynote speech, as a half-day program, or a full-day program. And it is based on the material from the book, and it takes a deep dive to it. So they can find out about that. And I have a new program that I'm literally launching this week. And it is a mentoring program, one-on-one mentoring via Zoom. And it is called Take Your Life Back.
Okay.
Right. It's a 7-session program, and there's basic, intermediate, and advanced, and everybody starts at basic.
Yep.
And it goes much deeper into the book than I'm able to, even into the workshop.
Mm, okay.
And it really has you recognize the stuff that stops you,
mm-hmm.
the thoughts that you use to mm-hmm. stop you,
mm-hmm.
and what you can do about it all to really get moving again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something to be really excited to get because, or to be about, you know, because to be able to see those changes and those improvements, right. That's a sweet affirmation, not just for you as the author and the workshop leader, you know, with people you work with, but for them themselves, you know, once they see an ounce of improvement, then their empowerment just really skyrockets, right?
That's right. And their confidence and their skills in dealing with the circumstances and situations that have always triggered them. And I tell people, what if they didn't anymore? What if they didn't have to?
Right.
What if, when that stuff starts to show up, I see you for the first time. Now, I know what to do. I don't have to fall over the edge.
Right.
Imagine what life would be like then.
You know what? That it would be absolutely limitless in what you can achieve. That's and right. and as you said that, Deborah, it makes me think of my aunt, my mother's sister, and this happened a long time ago, back in 1982, and things like anxiety, chronic depression, and those things, they weren't as society wasn't as conscious about those as they are today.
We didn't talk about them at all.
No, we didn't. And my aunt was going through something, you know, just very, very, very unexplored at the time, you know. And she was in a couple of homes, and so forth, and hospitals. And the long and short of it was the hospital prematurely released her and said she was fine to be released. And her husband, my uncle, brought her home, you know, and about 4 days later, you know, the long and short of it, she committed suicide, found his gun in the bedroom and just and shot herself. And she was very, very depressed, and no one could understand what was going on with her and why she was feeling this way. And you know, no one forces themselves to be in this state. No one wants to be in this state. And no one, not many people can look at themselves and say, okay, why am I like this? You know, they're just.
The why, there is no way. And even if you ask the question, you can't find the answer. Because you can't see past this.
Exactly. You can't see past that, right? I mean, because it's so real. It's so present, you know?
Yeah.
And she was to the point where she rarely said anything, You know, she just had this.
That makes sense. Because yeah. when you are living with depression, this is why you're feeling the victim of it. Because you don't know how to talk about it. There's no language. One of the things that I talk about in my book, You Aren't Depression's Victim, is how someone, a friend, a colleague, or a relative, whatever, the kinds of questions you can ask to begin to have them open up and find the language.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to, and that's great. I'm glad you included that and you mentioned that, right? Because, I mean, then you're breaking through. You're making a difference. You're getting through to them, you know. But yeah. you have to find that language, mm-hmm. you know. And unfortunately, back then, very few people, if any, found that language or knew that they had to find a language to break through. You know,
and I'm one of those. Who went there. I, someone at 14, something happened.
Yeah.
And the only recourse I could find for myself, because I saw no hope, is I tried to commit suicide.
Mm.
And fortunately, someone called me and helped save me. They called right after, took all the pills they possibly could. And,
yeah.
but and yet, we never talked about it after that.
No.
My siblings never knew it happened until they read the book.
Really?
We didn't talk about depression.
Right, right. Right, no. 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 And it was real then and it's real now, you know? Yeah, so it's, I'm glad to see the progress that society has made in acknowledging these things. But
I have to credit my own bias.
Uh-huh.
Because single-handedly, I credit her for bringing the conversation to the stage.
Yes.
And people reacted with huge emotions about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Started the conversation, and then other people jumped in and deepened it.
That's wonderful. Start that conversation, right? Deborah, you're the spark. You're the spark that is starting that conversation and that is sustaining that conversation. So I truly, truly commend you for the great work that you're doing. The awesome anecdotes and insights you've shared from the book with us on how we can take a stand and realize our true potential and the possibilities that we have in life once we decide and make the conscious decision to not be a victim to depression. Deborah Atlas, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I truly, truly appreciate you coming on and sharing this with our listeners.
Thank you. My book, You Aren't Depression's Victim, the workshop, Step Back from the Edge, the mentoring community, Take Back Your Life. It's about people not having to feel victimized anymore and being able to say, we're doing something else. I'm going to be fully in life with you. That's the point of all of it. And thank you for having me here today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. And live, right? I'm making the choice, the conscious choice to live. Oh,
fully.
And live fully. Thank you. Live fully. I mean, it's so inspiring. So inspiring. Again, thank you so much, Deborah, for coming on the show. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. And I want you to know that hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know and love who needs motivation and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.